From Santa Barbara, California, Timeless Voyager Radio with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers in the fields of environmental issues, alternative healthcare, new psychology, psychic phenomena, UFOs, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio. And my guest today, telepathic receiver for the Ashtar Command, Yvonne Cole. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right. Now, for those listeners that may be new to this, what exactly is a telepathic receiver and who is the Ashtar Command?
Well, a telepathic receiver is sort of under the general heading of channeler, but different insofar as most people think of channeling as a full-body trance channel like Jane Roberts and the Seth material, or I guess Jay-Z Knight would fall into that also. And then there's semi-trance, people who go into just a moderate light trance and do not recall what's being said through them. And there's a lot of those right now. Barbara Marciniak and the Pleiadians would be one good example. But I am a fully conscious, wide awake telepathic receiver. It just means that thoughts come into my mind that are definitely not my own. I know they're very different, and I simply use my vocabulary and together with their energy and mine, we put them into words to best express the thought. I guess that's as most concise as I could be.
All right. So the difference then between telepathic receiving and conscious channeling is that there is none, right?
Oh, definitely. Telepathic is conscious channeling as far as I'm concerned.
All right, so we've cleared that up. Now, for those people that are listening and maybe new to this, let's talk a little bit about the Ashtar Command and more specifically who Ashtar is.
Okay, the Ashtar Command, and I'm going to read this just this little bit because I thought it would be better if I let them explain themselves, and I spoke to them a little bit earlier, and this is their description, and I'll be glad to enlarge on it later. By their own words, the Ashtar Command is an organization of volunteers from all over the galaxy, from many different planetary systems and intergalactic forces, sources, with an S, sources. We have come together in this period of your history because we recognize that planet Earth is fast approaching a most momentous event, that of her ascension to another dimension, and we wish to be here to help the life forms residing on her surface, and in parentheses, those under and above it, to make this transition with as little discomfort as possible. We are also here to protect the Earth during this process from those outside sources that may have come to increase her struggle. Many of our members have been on Earth in past lives, and thus we feel you are brothers and sisters, for in truth we are. The Ashtar Command is governed by universal laws, and led by Lord Sananda, known to you as the Christ. We have a hierarchy as a command system, and each of us knows his or her position and serves with joy as we recognize the honor it is to be chosen to assist in this time of great change. The Ashtar members number many thousands and are mainly starships ranging in size from very small to large enough to house millions of your life forms with comfort and self-sustainment. We have the ability to rescue our own should that be necessary, but we will do this only as a last resort. Our primary mission is to raise the consciousness of mankind prior to the ascension and thus increase the harvest of enlightened souls who will then repopulate the newly cleansed and risen planet without the negativity that has plagued it for so long. So that's briefly, and now you want to enlarge on that, please do so.
Okay, I guess the thing is that people kind of get into issues, let's say, in spirituality and religious issues here. Certainly you bring up the concept of Lord Sananda as the head of the Ashtar Command. Why isn't this called the Sananda Command then?
Because Ashtar is a different person. Ashtar, I would say, let me rephrase it now. Lord Sananda is at the very, very top of the hierarchy of the Ashtar. The next step down would be, if you want to put it in military terms, although it's not a military, would be like a general going down to a colonel. Ashtar is the commander who enforces all of the entire command, ships and whatever else they do, but the very top is Lord Sananda.
I like using the analogy of the military command. So you would call Sananda which one now?
I would call Lord Sananda, if we're going to go military, let's put him, what's the top we have? The president, I guess, is the commander of all the armed forces. So we would put him at the very top and then come on down to your very first five-star generals and so forth that carry out the orders of Lord Sananda.
So one of those five-star generals would be Ashtar.
Well, I would say he's probably a six.
Well, in other words, he's directly under Sananda.
Yeah, he's the head man, yes.
Now, are there other people who are directly under Sananda, maybe, but not necessarily under Ashtar?
Well, they're not that I know of. I've never questioned them particularly on that. The personage that I deal with is named Theodoro, and he is a commander also. But his formal title is not only Commander Theodoro, but Speaker for the Group Mind of the Ashtar, which I've questioned him at length about, and he relates it as, well, exactly what it says. He speaks for all of the Ashtar Command in that they all telepathically link, but they come through him to me and several others. By the way, I'm not the only receiver.
Now, people who would look at this as three-dimensionality would refer to these beings as extraterrestrials, right?
Oh, yes, definitely they are extraterrestrials.
But extraterrestrial kind of limits, are these beings third or fourth dimensional or other dimensions?
Well, as far as I understand, Theo is fifth, and the command is made up of so many different beings. I'm sure they range no third, no fourth, fifth and above. And from that vantage point, they are able to help us because they are more knowledgeable. They are not better, and they make that very clear. They don't want to be looked upon as gods or godlike or anything like that. They're simply more evolved, and they're here to help.
Well, now, one of the discrepancies, of course, that comes up from the religious community is that people could accept Jesus as being Lord Sananda, but they like to think of him as the Son of God. Now, how do you reconcile that?
Well, gee, that's a little tricky. I don't know if I can reconcile it. I can just tell you what I believe, what Yvonne feels.
Well, that's fine. That's good.
And I come from a solid Christian background, and I guess in my own mind, I haven't had any trouble reconciling because, as far as I'm concerned, we are all sons and daughters of God. And that's the difference between Christianity. They say that Jesus is the only one. Well, he's not, and he'd probably be the first one to tell you that. In fact, if you have read some, Jesus is himself being received by many separate channelers, and he will tell you that quite strongly. We are all children of God. We are all sparks of God. The fact that he is a lot more evolved and is closer to the Creator does not, in a sense, make us any less than he or greater than he. We're all sparks of God.
And of course, he said that in the stories in the New Testament, didn't he?
Yes.
Yvonne, let's talk a little bit about how this started. When did you first realize you could telepathically receive?
Well, I can tell you exactly when it was because it was quite a shock. It was July of 1986. I was sitting in my living room reading a book by Ruth Montgomery, and she was one of my favorite authors, her and Edgar Cayce. And if you have spoken to many channelers, you will find that's a common thread. It seems to be that those two particular authors and channelers themselves were a very impetus for all of us to read their books and begin to open up. But I was reading her autobiography, I believe. Yes, it was her autobiography. And I came to the point where she was describing her first episode with automatic writing from her spirit guides named Lily. And the moment I read that statement, there was a knowingness that came over me. If it's ever happened to you, you will understand. It's just something you know you can do. And I knew I could do that. And I was so sure of it that I didn't do it immediately. I prayed about it for a long time because I recognized there was a great responsibility that comes with this. And after a while, I felt comfortable with it, and I went to the dining room table and picked up a pen, and it moved, and it wrote all on its own. And that's how it began. And, of course, handwriting got very slow very quickly, so I moved to my electric typewriter, and now I receive most of the time on my computer, on my word processor. I can do it direct mind-to-mind. I can speak it as I receive it. I do not channel publicly because that is my choice. I feel a little uncomfortable with that, but I do take requests, and I do take, I don't do readings, but I do have answer questions for anybody that has, and I just put them to Theo, and we do it that way. I also do a lot of public speaking, and I'm really beginning to enjoy that, except right now I'm a little nervous.
All right. Now, do you, are you in front of your computer now?
No, I'm not. I'm at my desk.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question, and maybe perhaps you know the answer. Now, if we look at the Ashtar command as a fifth and sixth dimensional area, is that my correct understanding?
Yes.
Do people, when they die, do they go to the Ashtar area?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I would say not directly. My understanding of the experience of death is one where your spirit leaves your body and you go to whatever area, whatever level of development you have reached at a soul level and are met there by your own personal guides who have been guiding you all of your life. There's no human being alive that doesn't have one or more spiritual guides. And you are met there and then you go through the process of reviewing and analyzing and then from there make your decision as to where you want to go next. And if you have been or wish to be a part of the Ashtar, and if that's your choice, fine. But no, I don't think you can put the Ashtar command as a place where all souls go. No, I would say that's wrong.
Well, the reason I had asked that is because it always seems so ambiguous. Location, of course, is something that we third dimensionally are always thinking about. But on the other side of it, I was just wondering if perhaps Ashtar and the command itself was really nothing more than a name for all these other worlds we hear about.
Well, you know, Bruce, I don't know. I really don't know. It doesn't seem quite right to me, but it's a possibility. They've never described themselves as that to me. So I would have to say from Yvonne's point of view, no.
Let's move ahead now a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about Ashtar and where does he come from and what is the purpose of his state?
Well, Ashtar, the person or Ashtar, the command?
Ashtar, the person.
I have never personally communicated with Ashtar. Of course, I know of him. He's a very enlightened being. He is here heading up the command to assist Earth, because as you know, Earth is now approaching a dramatic shift. I know there's been a lot of talk about Earth changes, and there is no way that if anyone I know of from whatever level can absolutely say this is going to happen in a traumatic, horrible way or in a less dramatic way, because what's happening on Earth now is changing so quickly, and what we think and what we do affects the future. So predictions are tricky. However, this is what they have told me. Between now and the time I begin speaking with them, they see a dramatic difference, and it's very hopeful. When I first spoke to them in 86, it was really a lot of doom and gloom stuff, because the outlook for the whole planet at that time was very, very dark. We were in the middle of so many crises, and I know we still are, but the difference is there is a movement, I guess you could call it an underground movement, because it never makes the headlines. Only the bad stuff makes the headlines. But there's a tremendous movement of people toward a light and love philosophy. Are reaching for a higher awareness, are wanting to get away from this third-dimensional, destructive, dualistic stuff that we've been stuck in for so long. And Ashtar and the whole command are here to help us do that. And the way in which they do that, well, it's, there's multi ways. First of all, they are able, and don't ask me how they can do this, but they are able to send down a lot of powerful energy to the planet's surface, which is picked up by all life forms on it. And this energy is a very high light love type energy, and it makes us raise our awareness. I believe in each of us, the God spark within us reacts to this. And the other way that they do it is to protect the planet and keep out the other negative forces that are sort of in here trying to take advantage. So there's several things that they do and several ways that they do it. But that's their purpose. They're here to assist. They're here to help. And they're here to stop any other forces that are coming to make the situation worse.
Let's talk a little about Theodoro. Now, you say that he is the group mind. That's a nice concept. Maybe you could be very specific about that.
Well, he's the speaker for the group mind. And because they all communicate telepathically, to describe themselves as having a group mind makes a lot of sense to me. You know, we can't do that at this point, but if you can use your imagination a little bit and realize what our whole planet would be like if all of us could read each other's minds, there wouldn't be much chance for deception or lying because everybody would know. Well, of course, they, being in a higher dimension, they've gone all through that. They don't have those negative thoughts anymore, but they do are all in constant mental communication with each other. That's a little bit difficult for me to imagine on this level, but I believe it. Being as I'm a telepathic receiver myself, and since I have been communicating with them, my own abilities have gotten a little better, and I can almost read certain individuals pretty clear, depending on how well I know them and so forth. So telepathic communication is a good thing, and a group mind is a very possible thing, and that's exactly where they're coming from. And so they all speak as one voice, and his voice is the one that's speaking to me.
So Theodoro, was that the first person you came in contact with?
No, actually he wasn't. The first energy I spoke with was feminine. Theodoro is masculine. And her name was Eunethia, and she was a Venusian, and she was a starship commander. And she was the very first one that came through, and I've since learned that she is and was my sister in past life experiences. And I was very close to her, almost too close. I think, Bruce, it's important for me to let your listeners understand that telepathic communication and being a channel is a learning process, and it's guided by them. So back then when I first communicated with Eunethia, she taught me a lot of things, but it was on a lesser level because I was just learning. I was a student, and I'm sure I still am. And so the things that I learned at that point are not quite the same as what I'm learning now. She was with me for about 3.5 years, and we became very, very close friends. In fact, I became almost dependent on her, and they don't want that. And then one day she left. She said, "It's time for me to go. You will not be hearing from me again." And I felt devastated, which it gives testimony that I was indeed depending on her, and that's not right. And so she did leave. And the next entity that came through was a male energy force, and his name was Anasin. And he was very stern and very like a no-nonsense type, like, "All right, you've had this good little friendship, and you've been really fun and having a good time, but now it's time to get down to business. We have things to learn." And it was a dramatic change. And I have to confess, Anathan and I didn't get along all that good. I learned from him also, but he was such a dramatic change. So we communicated for about a year, and then came Theodoro, and that was quite unexpected. There he was one day, and Anathan was gone, and Theo has been with me ever since. And there are times also that I have been able to receive other members of the Ashtar. And so I guess you could say I'm broadening.
Now, do they give you instructions, let's say, for example, dietary instructions? This is personal stuff. I realize you may not want to talk about it, but do they?
I'm sorry, what type of instructions?
I was wondering if they give you dietary instructions.
Oh, they're terrible nags. They're just awful. They're always nagging me. See, I have given them my permission to use all my sensory inputs, so they're with me all the time. They don't pop in and out without my knowing it. I have to ask them, although it's always there in my mind. If I want to communicate with them, I can. But yes, they definitely do. They never give orders, but they'll nag me. They'll say, you know, you're eating too much of this, and this is not good for you. And they give me all kinds of instructions, like drink lots and lots of water. It helps me as a receiver. We are water-based creatures, and this planet of ours is certainly water-based, and we work in a magnetic atmosphere, so water is important. Clean, pure water, I might add. They're very specific about that. And they give me advice on exercise and how to take care of my physical body and so forth. Yes, they do. And I appreciate it. I don't always eat it, but I appreciate it.
Now, of course, the information is personal. It has to do directly with you. Is there anything you'd like to share with us?
Oh, how personal do you want to get? Actually, Bruce, I have, of course, spoken with them on a personal level about my own personal life when I've gotten into problems and my children have become involved. And they're always very kind and very wise, but they never, ever give specific instructions because they say that's an infringement on our free will. And that irritates a lot of people. I have lots of people that write to me because of my articles being published in Connecting Link, and I always answer every letter, and most of the questions are directed toward Theo, and some of them are very personal, and the people get a little upset because Theo will not tell them if they're supposed to marry Joe Blow, or if they're supposed to change their job, or if they're supposed to move to California or out of California. These are decisions that he says you must make yourself, because if he were to tell them, that's an infringement of our free will, and they will not do that. They will advise, they will give directives, but they will never, no, directions, but never directives. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course, and I guess what people need to understand is that this is the natural law, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. In fact, I would use that as a criterion to judge a high-level source. If you are receiving information and you're new at it, and you receive some information that starts giving you orders and telling you what to do and causing any level of fear, I think that's a good rule to judge by. If any information you receive as a new channel or as an experienced channel causes any level of fear, question it. By all means, question it. Never give your power away, ever. It's very important. Don't do that. I experience. Because in the beginning, I did. In the beginning, I was so enthralled with it, and it was like a toy. It was, oh, isn't this fun? I can talk to these beings. This is great. And I would sit down, and I didn't go through any protective ritual. I didn't do any prayer. I didn't surround myself with light. I didn't even have enough sense to ask for the person I wanted to speak to. I just opened and said, okay, who can we talk to today? And I got some pretty bizarre stuff. I have pages and pages and pages of documentation and conversations with discarnate spirits who were just bored and were just loving to get into all of this. So I guess a little advice here would be wise to any listener who is opening to channel, and this is going to happen more and more now. Whatever higher being you subscribe to, I don't care what you call him, whatever you believe in, be sure that you reach for the highest source possible, and always surround yourself with some sort of light and love protection, and call on whomever it is that you trust, and in that sense you will be all right. And then, of course, I always ask for Theo by name. That's important.
Well, of course, I've always said that just because a person dies doesn't mean they've gained knowledge or anything.
No, you have to learn. You keep on learning when you leave your body, just as you do here, probably at an accelerated rate because third dimension is a little thick and heavy. But definitely the learning continues on and on and on. I don't think it ever stops. I hope not. It would be really boring. I think that's one of the things that bothered me about the Christian philosophy of heaven. Sitting up there playing a harp with wings did not sound like a very interesting thing to do. And, of course, there's a whole lot more to it than that.
It brings up a lot of things. Can you be a little bit more specific? Because there are probably a lot of people out there that would like to or have begun channeling. What maybe three or four steps that you think are things that are safe?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that because I do think it's important. I know it is. From my own experience, as I said before, if you are beginning to open to channel or you have the desire to open to channel, I would say meditation is an excellent way to prepare yourself for this. You still your body in whatever form of meditation that you use and put yourself in a very loving, light-filled place and surround yourself with your own guides, your own spiritual guides, and as high as you wish to go. I always surround myself with the light of the Christ consciousness because I have a Christian background, and I know that whether you call him Christ or Sananda or whatever, that's who he is. And I trust that. And you can go straight to the top. Go straight to God himself and ask for protection and say and state very clearly what your purpose is. And your purpose needs to be of a very selfless nature. In other words, you want to serve your fellow man. You want to help your fellow beings. You want to help the planet. You want to make things better. And in that sense, those are the type of beings will come to you, like attracts like, and that is what will come to you. And that's true. That is what will come from you. And if you surround yourself with the light of the Christ or the Creator himself, to my knowledge, there is no harm can come to you, but you have to state that and make it very clear.
Just to be specific, what kind of a statement would you suggest? People, of course, you know, can make their own, but this would be good to maybe just give them a template or something.
I can tell you my prayer. This is my prayer before I begin. I ask, I say it so much and I don't have it written down. It's more or less, please allow the Christ consciousness to surround me and protect me with his light and his love. Allow me to be a pure and clear channel. Allow no negative or harmful influences to affect this channel in any way. Allow the information given and received to be used only for the good of all universal kind. And then I ask for the protection of my own favorite saints. I like Saint Michael and a few other of my own spiritual guides. I have an Indian guide. I ask for his protection also. And that's basically, it's short, but it works. And you know, I don't know if this will work for everybody, but I can feel an energy rush. I can feel a little magnetic tingle that goes throughout me, and I know they're there. I know that they're there.
Let's move on a little bit and talk about the grays and abductions. People are hearing a lot about UFO-type abductions. What do you hear from Theodoro on that?
Well, we've had many, many conversations about this because these questions come in all the time, and they mainly come from people who have had abduction experiences. Theo's favorite word is not abduction, but participant, and I'll explain that a little bit. People who have been, I'll say abducted because that's a common word, have been taken on board a spaceship and have been subjected to the various physical experiments and so forth, and who have been terribly frightened by this, have in fact, according to what Theo has taught me, agreed to do this prior to coming into this form. Of course, when you enter Earth, you forget your agreements. You forget your life's plan. That's part of being on a free will situation. The challenge of all of us here is to remember what we came here to do. I'm still in that process myself. But those that have been a part of this, and believe me, there are many, many more than as being known, and certainly more than the government will ever tell you, which is none, I have met and interacted with, I would say, probably 100 contactees on various levels. And the general consensus, I won't say this is all the way, but the general consensus is once they get past the initial fear, once they get past the terror of finding themselves in a situation they have never been in before physically, and look into the purposes behind it, their life changes, and it generally changes for the better. In other words, the experience enriches their lives, and very often causes them to go in an entirely different direction. Yes, it's upsetting. Yes, it's frightening. But if you understand that it serves a higher purpose, and I guess I better go into that higher purpose here. Is it all right if I go into the genetic experiments that's being done, Bruce?
Yes, let's talk about them. I think people are definitely interested at this point.
Well, there's a lot of it going on, and it is a frightening thing, I understand. But Theo has explained to me that the reason that these experiments are going on is because the little gray guys, known by their name as the Zeta Reticulans, and they do come from the Zeta Reticulan planets, the planetary system, are interacting with the humans because they are creating a new species. And this new species is the hybrid of man and Zeta Reticulan. And the reasons for this that I have been told are that the Zeta Reticulan species themselves are dying out. They have lost the ability to reproduce. By reasons I don't understand, their genetic structure and our genetic structure is compatible. And so what they did was go before the, oh dear, we've not talked about the Free Federation or the Confederation of Planet. It's the system or the structure of government that the Ashtar reports to. They describe themselves as a Galactic United Nations. And we have, by the way, Planet Earth is a member. When any nation that is a member has a problem, they have to go before this organization to ask permission to do something about it, just as we would do if we wanted to go in to help Somalia. We went through the United Nations and asked for permission, and then we got a United Nations force to go do this. Well, they do the same things, and the little Zeta Reticulans went before them and asked permission based on the fact that they were dying out as a species to interact with the humanoids on planet Earth to develop a new species that would save their own. And so they were given this permission because it was a humanitarian thing and would do no harm. And I know that that's going to rile a lot of people because they're still caught up in the fear of what's happened to them. But overall, and by the majority, all these people who have been taken on board have not really been physically harmed. They have been frightened, yes. But if they could get past the fear, the experience did not really harm them. And so the specimens that were taken, and it is ova and it is sperm, and yes, there have been women who have had fetuses taken and had these children grown in kind of a test tube situations. I'm sure you're familiar with Bud Hopkins' books. His stories are true. This has happened, and these hybrid children are being raised, and there is a new species right now. But from the larger point of view, from the big picture overlook, is it such a terrible thing to save a species? They've earned a bad reputation. There have been some instances of negative grays that have interacted, and these have not been positive experiences. But by and large, the overall interactions of abductions have been of a for beneficial nature. And the most important thing, every single soul that has been involved in this really did agree to do it prior to coming here, but of course they forgot that. And that's where you get into some trouble.
So you're saying that those people who have been abducted, okay, they incarnate on the earth in their own body, they live a rather, let's use the word veiled, kind of Mayan existence, like we're all doing, not knowing why we're here and what we're doing. And then all of a sudden, one day they wake up and realize that they've been abducted, and now they're mad, having forgotten that they had agreed. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that's pretty good, Bruce. That's pretty close.
And you're also saying then that the purpose of the abduction, of course, is not to scare us and not to take these people away, but rather these people that have been abducted had offered, I guess, to help solve the problem of the inability of the Zeta Reticuli to continue their propagation. Is that correct?
Right. That's exactly right. And by the way, the new species has a name. It's called Esasani. And those are the two of them that did appear to me in my room one night. I've met them. I've touched them. I can prove that. And they are physical, and they were third-dimensional. They can do that. they can lower that vibration to come down here, and they can also dematerialize and materialize, and they have full command of all of the things that we have forgotten. And do you want me to go into that? I'd like to tell you about that, because I think it might help some of the listeners who have had experiences with these little gray guys and maybe help them understand them a little.
All right, before you do that, what is their name again? Can you spell it?
E-S-S-A-S. Oh, God, you wouldn't want me to spell it. E-S-S-A-S-S-A-N-I, I believe. Essasani, just like it sounds. Any for any readers that have read any of Bashar's books, he has a picture of him in his book. Oh, dear, I can't remember the name of it right now.
All right, it'll come to you. But, all right, tell us about the personal visitations.
Okay, and this was exciting for me because I had never met them. I have been on board a ship many times. The time I remember, and this was done through the help of the hypnotic regression with Dr. Leo Sprinkle, was when I was 4 years old. That was my first experience. I was just a little girl, and I was taken on board when I was walking across the meadow. I was born and raised on a dairy farm in Wisconsin, and I was lifted up into this sparkly round cloud, and I remember it vividly. And I had no fear because I think I was too young to have fear. And I found myself in a round room, with some very wise beings sitting in a circle, sort of like a council. I couldn't see their faces very clearly, but the energy that they were emitting was one of such pure love and such beauty that I was not at all afraid. And they telepathically communicated with me, and they told me that I was a very special child and that I had a mission that I was to do, and that during my life in this time I would help a lot of people, and that I need not be afraid because I would always be protected and watched over. And that was basically it. And then suddenly I was back in the meadow in a different location, by the way, because I remember I was picked up near the creek and ended up near the woods. And so I guess that was my first missing time. And then I'm sure I was on board many times after that. I don't recall them all, and I don't feel the necessity to go into hypnotic regression to find them out. But this particular instance where they came into my room happened just 2 years ago in the house I'm living in now. I was asleep. I was awakened by an energy shift in the room, and the best way I can describe that is to say, if you've ever had a very mild electric shock or maybe that feeling just before a storm, you can feel the electricity in the air. You know it's different. And immediately I knew who was there. And I did just what everybody else does. I pulled the covers over my head and shook. It scared the tar out of me. And even though I had been communicating for many years and I knew that they would not harm me, there was still that initial reaction. So I did what I always do when I get frightened. I prayed and I asked to have the fear taken away because I really did want to see them and talk with them. And so the fear was gone instantly. And I sat up in my bed, and I looked down at the end of my bed, and there they were. There were two of them, two of the little gray guys. They went to Zetas now. They're the Essasani, and the difference is that the shape of their face is a little different. It's not quite so sharp, and their eyes are not quite so large, and they're a little more fleshed out. They're a little more human-looking. But they're very short, and I can tell you how short they were because I got out of bed, went around and got down on my knees so I could be eye level. And that's exactly what I did, and I was eye level. And I'm 5'3", so you can figure that out. And we immediately began telecommunicating. No one speaks. None of these beings speak. They're mind to mind. And I said, in my mind, I said three things, and they were very important things. The first thing I said was, I'm not afraid of you. I know you. I love you. Which means to me that I've known these beings before because I felt like that. I felt no fear at all. And then I put my hands on their head because I wanted to touch them. And I did. I touched their head, the one I was dealing with, who seemed to be the leader. And then I took them by the hand, and I took them on a tour of my house. I'm a decorator by profession, and I thought I'd just give them a little tour. And out of the side light of my eyes, I noticed there were several other little beings in various rooms, but they were just kind of checking it out. And we came downstairs, and then there was a time lapse, and I can't really describe what happened in there. But then I was back in my bed, and I knew they were still there, and I wanted to be sure I was awake, so I touched my eyes to make sure they were open, and they were open, but also I smelled my hands, and I had the scent of their skin on my hands. And that's something I've never smelled before. It wasn't bad, but I would certainly recognize that it was very pungent and very different. And it made me know that they were, in fact, corporeal, human, third-dimensional there. And, of course, then they were gone, and I went to sleep. And they came one more time, and the same scenario. I woke up and knew they were there, and this time just the one was there. And I got down on my knees again, and this time something really incredible happened. He put his little arms around me, and he drew me into his body. We were two beings melded into one. And by doing that, he allowed me to feel what he felt and think what he thinks. And it was wonderful. It was absolutely incredible. And there actually aren't any words for me to describe that, except to say that's what total absence of fear feels like. That was the last time that they appeared to me in physical form. But it was an incredible experience for me, and I'll remember it always, and it totally took away any fear I would ever have of them. And I think it might be a good time here, Bruce, to interject my personal mission here.
By all means, let's hear it.
My personal mission on Earth is to be a go-between, an ambassador between the extraterrestrial forces and humanity, because very soon now, they are going to be appearing in numbers so great that nobody's going to be able to deny their existence. And they don't want to cause any panic, and they don't want to cause any fear, and yet it's extremely important that all mankind realizes we're not alone here. And these extraterrestrials do exist, and these forces are here to help us, because we're going through some hard times, and we're going to go through more hard times. And they want to help. And so I guess my job is to say to anyone who's willing to listen, don't let your fear take over. Open your mind and realize there are other beings in the universe, and they're not negative, and they're not here to take over and rule us and make us slaves and all that foolishness. They're not. They're here to help us.
Now, these new ones are called Esasani?
Esasani are the new, that's the hybrid of the gray and the Zeta Reticulan and the humans.
Knowing that that basically our bodies are in a sense as holders, what do you think of that?
Holders?
Yeah, well, things that hold the soul.
Well, actually, that's a good description of all physical form. Any whatever form it's in, it's still holding a soul.
So I guess the point is that that we can probably go into these new bodies just as well as these other ones that we know about.
Absolutely. And they're not the only ones. There are all kinds of bizarre shapes and forms that we're going to be seeing. I mean, all life forms don't look like us. I mean, there's all kinds. There's people who are mainly plant-like. There are people who are insect-like. There are people who are reptilian. I mean, our own dolphins and whales, the setons, they have a soul just like we do. They're a whole species that's just, well, actually, they're more advanced than we are. They're not killing each other. So, you know, we can't limit the creative form to just humans. But well, look at how great the movie E.T. made out. People weren't afraid of him once they got used to him, right? Isn't it just a matter of opening your mind and removing the fear and allowing yourself to get to know them?
You have a message from Theo that you would like people to hear, don't you?
Yes, I do. I got it from him this morning when we discussed this interview, and if you like, I will read it to you now.
Please do.
Earth is a free will planet, and we are under a prime directive to not interfere with this creator-given gift, and so we do not, but we do all we can within the directive of assistance and protection. We send down wave upon wave of light-filled energy to so bombard your inner souls that the encoded memories of who you truly are will awaken and begin to help us from your level of awareness. As much as we can do from here, there is so very much more that those of us who are aware of their purpose can do from the surface. One such light-filled being is Yvonne, whom we have nurtured from her birth and watched over until we felt she was ready to awaken to her chosen task. There are thousands like her who have become aware of their mission, and there are thousands more who will do so in the immediate future. Upon their dedication to their chosen paths rests the future of your abused planet, for only they can turn the tide. They can use their free will to actively spread the word and bring awareness to those who have not heard the call. Time is running out, and Earth will ascend with or without those who reside on her surface. She can take no more of the abuse that has been heaped upon her, all in the name of progress and civilization. Your early Native Americans lived in harmony with her for thousands of years and never harmed her. Can you say as much? This is how it will occur. We do not know the exact moment, but we do know how it will happen because it has happened before. The Earth has cleansed herself many times, but this will be the first time she lifts to a higher dimension, which will preclude the chances of this abuse ever happening again. In the fifth dimension, the dualistic system is non-existent. Deceit and fear are non-existent. Telepathy is the means of communication. Love and light are the rule. Those who choose to remain in third dimensional level may do so, but not on planet Earth. They will go to a place where they may continue their growth at their own chosen level. The rest will ascend with Mother Earth and be her caretakers in the thousand years plus of peace promised by all of your great teachers in the past. We are honored to be a part of this magnificent graduation and stand ready to assist all mankind in any manner allowed. Awaken now, dear brothers and sisters, for we await to join you as the family we truly are. Adonai Theodoro.
Why do we skip over fourth dimensionality all the time and go right to fifth?
I think the reason for that is because they always describe it to me as going from third through fourth and rapidly to fifth. Fourth dimension is very large. If you looked at it like on a linear structure, the very lowest level of fourth dimension is where like discarnate spirits and ghosts reside. People who have passed over and refused to accept the fact that they are physically dead, or accept it but don't want to leave. See, you still have your free will. Just because you shed your body doesn't mean you're automatically an angel. It doesn't work that way. But as fourth dimension has many gradations, and as you go up and up and up, you keep rising in awareness and learning and so forth until you get to the very highest portion of fourth, which is light-filled beings, and they'll pop easily into fifth. And I guess we're going to slide right on through fourth. There are several fourth-dimensional beings alive and well on planet Earth now in various degrees. But that I know of, very few fifths, because that's why we're heading. We're heading toward fifth.
Well, I guess the problem is linear thinking kind of precludes us from understanding what this means, but I get the gist of it anyway.
Yeah, I agree. It is a little sticky there, but that's the way it's been explained to me.
You have about 2 minutes. Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, I just want to say thank you very much for having me, and I hope that I haven't upset anybody. That's not my intention. And that's basically it.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it, Yvonne. It was really a pleasure. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.